Hey folks, it's John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I literally record right here in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach here in Washington, D.C. Lots to cover this week, but before we get started, some programming notes. New episodes drop every Monday. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to like or subscribe or leave a comment. It does help people find the show, and I appreciate that. If you want to talk further, I'm on Twitter at MeehanEDU. That's like Meehan, like my last name, and EDU, like teaching. I try to get better at teaching all the time, and I'm dead serious about that. Like, I don't pretend to be the expert on everything. I do this podcast to share what I'm going through, what I'm working through, but it's just like Twitter. You know, it's just opinions, and it's one person's opinion, though I might think it's an informed opinion. It is not by any means meant to be definitive. And then after that, I have a website, adrenalinerush.com, where I have templates and cool things all related to the book I wrote. It's all about game-changing student engagement inspired by theme parks, mud runs, and escape rooms. That's adrenalinerush.com. I have a members site that I work on. It's me and Michael Matera. We're changing the world, offering student engagement, teacher engagement at the speed of life. And our site is called emc2learning.com. Hang out there. We have hundreds of resources and thousands of really cool things, people to connect with, and things that can change the world and change the game. But today, I want to talk about changing the game and changing the world with a quote that I learned when I was in 7th grade. I was in a technology class. We had a tech class. It was actually a shop class. They didn't call it shop. I think they call it technology, which is wild because the technology we learned was how to use a drill press, how to use a bandsaw. But, like, okay, technology it was. I think I probably could have done better in my life if I studied computers earlier. But I grew up in rural New Jersey, and tech class was definitely a time to learn the tech of woodcraft. And I've actually done really well with that stuff. I kind of geek out about use of that technology. I've often said, as a kid, I find myself quoting that line from Death of a Salesman, where Willie Loman famously says to his son Biff, his son Happy, he says, "A man who cannot use tools is not a man." And I feel very Tim the Tool Man Taylor, very toxic masculinity when I laugh at that. This weekend, I'm mounting a TV on my wall. I'm very excited to be able to be like, oh, I need toggle bolts. So down to the Home Depot I go, and I know exactly what I'm looking for, and I'm very excited about that. And growing up, my dad was a contractor, and my summer job was I would work with him in different capacities until I got into, like, high school, and then I got actually like a full-time job as a contractor's assistant, and I realize I'm telling a lot of stories to get to the point of today's story, but it's a good one, I promise. I applied for a job at a local, series of local restaurants, a very small town. There's not a lot of restaurants, and it's a very slow turnaround time to be like a busboy to find out whether you got a job. We don't have traffic lights in my town, it's very, very small. So I put in by like driving in and dropping off a resume, and if they were interested, they would call you. There was no internet like to do that stuff. And in the meantime, we didn't hear anything from my dad. Reached out to this guy, Lou Schifferano. Hi, Lou, if you're listening. Hi. I don't think you're listening. But if you're listening, hi. And Lou's a contractor buddy of my dad's. And he's like, hey, actually, I'm building a house. Lou had a property that he owned. And his mother was moving in with the family. And rather than have her move into the house, they were building a second house on the same property. And the two houses would be like adjacent with like a corridor that would connect them. So it wasn't an addition house, it was a full-blown house, like, soup to nuts, ground floor up. And his idea was that his mom would live with them full-time in that, you know, like, the in-law suite that was its own standalone house. And then when the inevitable day came that his mom was no longer with the family, they would turn it into an income property and rent it out. So it was designed to be a self-sustaining, more than apartment, full-blown, like, house-size thing. It was a three-car garage kind of size house. So we spent all summer building the house. It was cool. Awesome. It was just me and Lou. I learned a lot about construction and about hanging drywall and pouring concrete and roofing and lighting, electric, plumbing. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. And now that I own my own house, it's one of the great joys of my life to be able to, like, roll my sleeves up and do the tools thing. You know, get dirty, get messy with it. Thinking back to that technology class I had way back in the day, I was like, oh, right. I need XYZ for this drill bit, or I need ABC for this, stud finder. Like, you know exactly the tool for the job, and you're looking for it. But I remember this quote that I came across. How was that for a 5-minute introduction to the point of the story? I remember this quote that I came across in technology, because in the 7th grade, we had to build, like, these, just, like, simple desktop caddy type things. So, like, it was a pencil holder, or it, like, could be used to, like, hang your scissors on, like a jewelry caddy or a desktop caddy. You basically just practice using the jigsaw, you practice using the drill press, you know, you fold a few holes drilled in a block of wood, now as a pencil holder, right? Okay, you have the idea. But we had a little, I want to say almost like, imagine an old school green chalkboard that the teacher would write on one side, and then they could flip it, and the thing would be on the other side, right? So it was like a message board on two sides. It wasn't made out of chalk, it was just made out of wood, but you had a dowel run through it, like a wooden stick run through it, and a little spinner on the side, so like you could flip it. Almost like a, I don't know. I guess I'm doing a really poor job of explaining it. The easiest way I could describe it is as if it were a giant green chalkboard. But it was only about the size of an index card. And so we made this spinner thing and affixed it to our desktop caddies or the things that we were creating. And Mr. Randall, that's his name, my tech teacher, had us put wood glue on that face of that easel or that chalkboard and glue a sticker on there. But the sticker was just a piece of paper. And it said, "There are no elevators to success." And you glued that on the one side. And then you took it and you pushed it and you flipped it over. The other one says, "You have to take the stairs." So the ultimate message read, you know, as a flipper, "There are no elevators to success. You have to take the stairs." And that tech class in seventh grade really stuck with me. I mean, I mentioned some of the things that I've done with that type of technology in the years since. I mean, it's like a 30-year-old story. But, like, I am now owning my own home. And I am doing stuff with tools, right? More power. I think about it when I study literature, you know, like reading Death of a Salesman, I'm immediately reminded of that same idea of no elevators to success, you have to take the stairs. And even looking at the story of Willie Loman, which, before I quoted him as if he's the hero of that play, right? You know, a man who can handle tools is not a man. The great irony of that story is that Willie believes the only way to success is to be a person who can work with your hands. He doesn't see that you can work with your mind, and he's very, I guess, judgmental of Bernard, who is his neighbor's son. He calls him anemic. He says, you know, Bernard, he's liked, but not well-liked. You know, real men do X and Y and Z. It's very toxic masculinity, and Willie Loman, of course, is the salesman, who, major spoiler, by the end of that story, we'll be seeing the story of his death. Not just his physical death, but also the death of his worldview, the way that he thinks. And I think that idea of handling tools is a big part of a technology that came long before the technologies of today. Very quickly, then, it's easy to say, well, I guess this is the death of that world. Like, you don't have to use your hands and use tools anymore. But I don't think that's the point I'm trying to make. I'm thinking that even though the technology class was already outdated when I was taking it, it helped instill valuable lessons. And I think we would do well to remember this black and white way of looking at the world, where there's the old world and the new world, is oversimplified and I think flawed. And while this might be like very heavy for a teaching podcast about something you learned 30 years ago, like I'm struck and reminded by this existential thing about, like, what is the purpose of school anyway? What is the purpose of teaching? And I think very quickly, as we talk about the pandemic or the end of the pandemic and coming back after the pandemic, there's a tendency to say, well, the kids are feeling X and the teachers are feeling Y and the parents are feeling Z. It would be very easy to create two buckets and say that, you know, the kids feel X and the teachers feel Y. Or the parents feel X and the admin feel Y. And I think that the challenge is to remember that quote in a technology class, there's no elevators to success, you have to take the stairs. It reminds me to kind of do the hard work, because to simplify is to falsify. Like, yes, there are kids who are feeling X, Y, and Z, but not all kids are feeling X, Y, and Z. Yes, there are some people who are successful who use hand tools and are men's men, but there are other people who are successful who don't use tools and are still every bit of a man's man. There are people who use their minds and are anemic, but there are people who use their minds and are really remarkably brilliant, intelligent. You know, talks about the story of Death of a Salesman, the story of this technology class, talks about the end of an era, the end of a way. And I think as we think about the pandemic, I see a lot of people looking towards the reuniting of schools and saying, oh, well, we can just, you know, dust our hands off and say it was only a dream, it was all something else. You know, back to work we go. That was weird, right? It's like, no, there's no elevators here. Like, we can't just fast-track this stuff. We have to go slow to go fast. I mentioned that last week. And I'm struck by that, too, because I've seen a lot of people during the pandemic who've tried to do these get-rich-quick approaches to teaching. Like, oh, well, this is easy. I don't mean to teacher shame ever. It's my podcast, so if you think I'm being mean, like, feel free to flame me on the internet. But I am struck, and I'm in some ways bothered by teachers who take to Twitter and just complain. Like, I don't think complaining is particularly attractive. I think I'm very upbeat. I've expressed concern, you know, throughout this podcast. You know, at the start of the pandemic, I expressed concern about schools opening safely and teacher health and the safety of our students. But those aren't, like, if you're talking about a problem and then offering solutions, that's not complaining. That's ideating. That's getting through, hey, let's address the elephant in the room. Let's do the hard work necessary to get ourselves from point A to point B. I think we need to do better. I think we can do better, and that's why I have a podcast where I just give away a bunch of information for free. That's why I have a Twitter account where I share information for free. It's like a website where I give information for free. And when I build a membership site, I don't do it as a get-rich-quick scheme where it's, hey, I've earned nothing here. I'm going to pretend like I'm an expert. I'm going to show up and show off about all the cool things that I can do. Pay me money, please. It's like, nope, that is a get-not-rich-quick scheme or get-not-rich-very-slow scheme. Michael and I were working on that site for a year. Like, since last February, we were putting all the work into that site. We worked at a deficit. We spent our own money putting the things together, paying for hosting fees, paying for artists, paying for closed captioning, paying for the server costs, paying for all of the work that it takes to build a thing that when it shows up, it looks like, wow, clean and polished and professional and exciting. And I'm not saying that to, like, brag about how awesome I am. In truth, I don't think it's particularly anything other than someone who's willing to put in the work. So when I talk to people and they're like, oh yeah, I have this great idea for a book after COVID about all the ways that we could XYZ faster or better, I'm like, cool, you should write that book. You should do it. Like, clear out time for your day and do it. And they're like, what's your process look like? Because I have a lot of reasons to, you know, be busy. I'm like, okay, yeah, so do I. Like, and I record a podcast in the car. Like, thinking differently and getting out of your own way to say, oh, man, one day I'm going to have a book written. Cool. Talk to me in a week. How much closer is that book to getting written? Well, one day I have this idea for it. And what's worse, they're like, oh, yeah, I can just take the blogs that I already wrote and copy and paste them, and, like, the book is kind of already written. I was like, please don't do that. Like, a book is a book. A blog is a blog. If people buy your book and they see it's just a series of old blog entries, they're going to kind of smell a rat. They're going to feel like you tried to take the elevator there. You've got to take the stairs. I mean, like, when we come back to school, you can't say, well, yeah, all the kids are feeling X or all the teachers are feeling Y. Like, no, many of the kids are feeling X, but there are other kids who are feeling Y and Z. And I think if we bifurcate things, if we simplify things to such a point where it's like, well, it's all of this and it's all of that, what ends up happening is that house never really gets built. Like, doing the work at the Schifferanos, I remember watching in horror when we had to do a concrete, you know, our cement pour, because we had to build an octagonal wall. And Lou had this beautiful idea of, like, almost like a turret built onto the house that would connect the two homes. It was really, really ornate. And to build the foundation of it, we had to pour concrete and to put the rebar in there and, like, all these, you know, things. But in order to make a frame for a octagonal pour, you have to build out, like, two walls of wood, and then hope to God the concrete falls between them, and then after enough time you can just peel the wood away and that wood will set. But because it's not a four-sided wall, it's an eight-sided wall, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. Like, every one of those angles has to be perfect, and especially those interior angles when those two pieces of wood touch the back end or the inside of the concrete octagon, that wood doesn't really want to leave when it's been poured against. If you don't have the right rebar in there, if you don't have the right structural support on the inside, we did this pour, and I remember watching in horror when I just watched it collapse, like, just fall apart. You know, he has a big cement truck in, and it backs it up, and he puts his little chute right over the top of this channel or this gutter that we made where the wood separates, and then the concrete is supposed to pour in, like, a 6-inch or 8-inch thick concrete pour, and just watched it start to come in. But concrete is very, very heavy. And as it drops into that channel, it's like 5, 4, 3, 2, boom, and, like, the walls blow out. So the whole frame is destroyed, and now you have about an hour to pull all of that wood out of that pile and to get as much of the wet concrete away from that center as you can, because when it dries, you're going to need a jackhammer to pull the whole friggin' thing apart again. And if there's, like, chunks of wood sitting down there, or there's not rebar in there, like, what's going to end up happening is then you're going to be hitting against, like, all sorts of materials and trying to break it apart. It takes not just an hour, then it takes weeks to pull that apart. And then the pouring of that wall, the first time we did it, we did not anchor those pieces because, I mean, I was in a assistant. I'm just doing the fold. But Lou's like, I think we'll be okay. Like, we can just put the things in there, lightly affixed the wood, plywood, to that big area. And I think it'll be all right. It's only going to be a temporary thing. You know, we put, I think, some straps around it or some, you know, like some screws in the corner. It should be all right. And concrete doesn't play that way. Concrete is not going to be very forgiving to a lightly constructed, you know, like kind of tent or turret made of wood. So it destroyed it, just absolutely obliterated it. And then we had to do it all over again. Then we affixed every last board, 3 and 4 and 5 times. We had these support studs. We had all these joists. And it probably took an extra $200 worth of wood alone. Not to say anything of the plywood that we kind of had to repurpose, plus the rebar, plus the concrete. Like, it was a very expensive mistake, and it slowed the project down considerably. But I remember it because it was, you know, there's no elevators to success. You can't just sit there and say, I'm going to rush this one. I'm going to try to, it'll be fine. Yeah, it's good enough. Like, the pandemic was friggin' hard. So don't rush your way back to the end of the year. Coming back from the year will be hard. So don't pretend it was all a dream. Like, oh, well, all the kids needed X or Y or Z. All the teachers felt A, B, and C. Some teachers are burning out. Some teachers are complaining. But other teachers are thriving. Other teachers are really happy. Other teachers have learned some powerful things from this time, and they said, I want to do it better. We have to acknowledge all of those voices, all those lived experiences, and we can't, as a profession, pretend, well, you know, that's what it is. We can fast track it. Let's just cut and paste the best of what worked before and go on as if it was business as usual. It's not business as usual. Like, it's the end of an era, not just the pandemic era, but this era of this death of a salesman stuff, right? You know, it's the old way. There are things about it that needed to go, but there are things about it we can learn and carry from. So we don't become so toxic, so Willy Loman, and say, well, if you can't do X, you're not a Y or you're not a Z. It's like, no, some kids do X, some schools do Y, some teachers do Z. But there's a lot of ways to go about this, and if we are artful and mindful and intentional about it, I'm excited to pour some more concrete. I'm excited to get some new students in the classroom. I'm excited to put some lessons in play and say, I think we can do it better because we have learned from those things and realized there's a lot of ways to get from point A to point B. Yes, it's true that we'd like students to know the technology and the tools, but the technology and the tools will always be changing. And I think that that's beautiful because if we do it right, we've trained ourselves not on a particular skill set, but on a mindset. Hey, change is part of school. Change is inevitable. Change is something that we have to embrace. And say, change comes slow at different speeds for different students, for different people, for different classrooms. And we would be remiss if we did not acknowledge the trained students in those technologies. With the underlying principle that no matter what the technologies are, there are no shortcuts really here. You got to put in the work. I know we want it to be over. But like, if you run before you can walk, you end up getting really hurt. Death of the Salesman is a pretty good example of what happens in that story where someone thinks that they're more than they are. Don't want our schools to feel like that. I think we have incredible potential to do incredible things. And then this time after the pandemic, maybe it's just the summer sun, the sneaking hint of a new year. But I feel encouraged and I feel inspired to say, if we are smart about this, we are poised to do incredible things for a whole new generation of kids. Anyways, that's my thoughts for this week. Love to hear yours. Hit me up on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at MeehanEDU. Find me on emc2learning.com. I apologize that I'm doing these Shaggy Dog stories inspired by long works of literature and stories from my childhood, but I feel like it's a good time at the end of the year as you kind of go forward. You do look backward. I think that's a good thing, too, so let me know how it's working for you. Hit me up. Thanks again. God bless. Stay safe. Get vaxxed, wear a mask, or stay socially distanced, and we'll talk next time. Thanks again.